What is up, everybody? My name is Raymond Summerlin. This is the Sharp Angles Podcast, the fantasy preview edition of the Sharp Angles Podcast, which means I am joined by the one, the only, Mr. Rich Rebar, who is in the festive spirit today. How are you doing, Rich?
We're doing good, man. It's, you know, that time of year. You know, it's Christmas time. We've got, you know, NFL has waged war on Christmas this year.
Unbelievable.
They have absolutely attacked Christmas. They've attacked the NBA. They've gone after everything. There's nothing the NFL won't touch. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a worse assault than Starbucks cups. This is an all-out assault on your Christmas day with your family. I'm not that mad at it. I get to play Christmas Day DFS, so I'm pretty okay with it. Just to offer a peek behind the scenes here of the podcast, though, is Rich pops on the stream and he's dressed like he's currently dressed. I'm like, well, I guess I have to go find a red shirt. So I went and quickly found a red shirt, but I am not. I want to be very clear about this. I'm not a Grinch. I'm happy for people to love Christmas. My house is decorated to the teeth. We are currently in the neighborhood decorating contest, which is the most middle-aged suburban thing I think I've ever said in my entire life. But I just don't care at all about this holiday. I don't care even a little bit about it. And so it is always interesting to see everybody get excited. My wife, my sister get excited about it. I'm like, I'm happy for y'all. I'll watch Love Actually, but that's about Harry Potter. I'll watch Harry Potter. That's about where I am with this holiday.
Are you counting Harry Potter as a Christmas movie?
I feel like we watch Harry Potter. I don't know when we got started on it. Maybe the movies all used to come out at Christmas. I know that the last one definitely did come out around that time. And so I think they all used to come out at Christmas. And so maybe that's why I associate them with Christmas. They all obviously have, you know, that kind of Christmas break thing that happens in them. I think most of them do.
Yep.
And so I generally associate it with Christmas. So those are,
so it's, you guys watch Harry Potter.
Yeah. We watch Harry Potter, Love Actually, Die Hard, and Home Alone. Those are my four Christmas movies. I don't know if that's the list for most people, but that's
every Christmas Eve, me and my watch, we watch the four Christmas episodes of Community.
I support that fully.
100%. Those are amazing, amazing episodes.
Hot take, the Claymation one, I'm kind of over. I could live without the Claymation one, but all the other ones, I'm 100% in on.
I would rank that one third, for sure.
Yeah.
Three of the four.
I don't know about that one. Do we want to do, what we want to do in the off season? Do you want to do a Community deep dive podcast in the off season?
Absolutely.
Sean's in on it. Producer Sean just put that he supports watching Community episodes during Christmas. Oh yes, congrats! The Sharp Angles Podcast. Stay tuned for the off season. The Sharp Angles Podcast will become a Community podcast when we get there. But we should move on. We should talk about football. We still have a few more weeks of fantasy football left before we get into the real life playoffs, and so we should talk about that. Remember, you can come into our feed if you're listening to this as a podcast after the fact. You can come into the feed. You can ask us questions. We do this live every single Thursday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern over at YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Sharp Football. You can find us. Also, remember that you can be a part of the website. You can buy a package to the website, the fantasy content that Rich offers, the betting recommendation that Warren Sharps offers, which is just on an unbelievable streak right now. Like over the last 6 weeks, I believe his best bets are hitting at 75%, something wild like that, on a crazy streak. You can get 15% off for listening to the podcast. Use promo code ANGLES. Head over to Sharp Football Analysis. You can find all of that. All right, let's move on. We haven't done this segment in a while. We've been doing some other things, but we need to move back into real or fake. And it's a perfect time to move back into real or fake because we had yet another rug pull, yet another, you put it, Lucy pulling the football with Bijan Robinson last week. Ended up with 7 carries, ended up with 3 targets, was used less than Tyler Allgeier, losing touches to Cordarrelle Patterson. Also in that game, I believe Drake London and Kyle Pitts were targeted a total of 7 times. You know, what are you doing? I mean, you want to badmouth Arthur Smith, but at least he did everything he needed to do to get the win, right? They beat the Panthers, right? Is that what happened, Rich? They beat the Panthers? So they got the win.
For 59 minutes, they beat the Panthers.
Anyway, We're gonna stop being bad at the Falcons and all of the make the playoff Falcons bets I have. But I guess moving forward, the question is this like a one game blip? We had been seeing pretty good usage from Bijan before this game. Is this something we're continuing to be worried about? Because I mean, this week is a smash spot for him. And if you could trust his usage, I mean, I think he's definitely a running back one. You're definitely playing him. You're probably playing him if you survive this long with him on your team. So it's probably more of a DFS right. question, but like, is he going to get back to where he was, or are we starting to see kind of this fall off in usage?
Yeah, it's interesting. Cause I think when you look under the hood, like, was he ever really getting used? Like, you know, he had overall touch counts that we were interested in, but like he hasn't had more than 60% of the backfield touches in a game since week four. Like, so like, was he ever like all the way back, right? Like when you look at like the weekly leaders in terms of like backfield opportunity, like typically your RB1s, unless a guy like runs really hot on touchdown production or has like a bunch of catches, like you're operating in like the 70% range of like your backfield touches as like a true fantasy RB1 that like we're like ranking you and setting you as like Bijan's kind of been like a faux guy, like ranked there kind of all year, but he's never gotten that kind of workload. And it wasn't just a thing where like he fumbled and didn't come back in the game, which did happen. But like from go, Tyler Allgeier was involved as like the primary runner in that game. Like that was something clearly discussed and game planned for throughout the week. So he does take like a leap of faith. Like you said, obviously the guys that you probably have, like you're probably not benching him or you're just taking a shot on his upside. It's interesting because running backs score a lot of points against the Colts. And like the way you would want to attack the Colts is like use Bijan, like his receiving ability, but like they're good against the run. Like they don't give up a high yards per carry, but they give up a lot of touchdowns to running backs, which kind of masks that. So it's just kind of a weird spot. Like I'm kind of ready just for like this, like Arthur Smith experiment to be kind of over with, man. Like it's just, I think a lot of people have washed their hands with it. And the one thing is we don't know about with Arthur Smith is, has he done this because he doesn't trust his quarterbacks, or is this just who he is, right? Like we still have no clarity because they haven't had a good quarterback yet.
I think by the way, wash your hands of Arthur Smith, I think from your mouth to Falcons fans' ears, I believe is kind of where we are. About Indy, though, you're right that kind of overall for the season, but over the last 5 weeks, they've allowed 4.5 yards per carry to running backs. It hasn't been as strong recently. Also, Indy has a tendency throughout the season to kind of pace up games, so you would hope that maybe that leads to more touches. But I think that your point about how the share of backfield touches was never that great. It's just that there were enough backfield touches for him to go around. If this Indy offense, Atlanta has a good defense, so we'll see what happens. But if this Indy offense can come out strong, if Michael Pittman plays, are we going to see kind of him stuck in like 10 touch range again? Yeah, I think it's all, you know, it's all out there. One of the interesting talking points coming out of this game was something about light versus stacked boxes and how they might trust Allgeier more in those situations. So I went and looked it up, and the Falcons face a light box on just 14.9% of Bijan carries when he's on, or of carries when Bijan's on the field, and 35.3% with Allgeier on the field, which is a real chicken or egg situation, right? Yes. Like, are you facing those because Allgeier, they're not worried about him as a pass catcher and they pretty sure a run's coming? Or are you facing those because of the downs you're using him on? Or is this just a really situation if you think you're going to be facing these heavy boxes that they're happier to use Allgeier? I think it's more of the first thing, but it is an interesting situation for this offense.
Yeah, it was brought up like box counts are dictated by the offense, not the defense.
Yeah.
It's what personnel you bring into the game is what the defense is going to match your personnel. So if you're coming in like the Atlanta Falcons, who basically are a 12 personnel team, right? Like you're coming in or if you're not even coming in, you're coming out in 12, like they're going to match that. They don't need a nickel back in a lot of those situations, right? Like, so like you're going to get heavier boxes. Like, thanks, Arthur Smith. Like you've created the quandary that you're talking about.
And the thing about that is that was the reason you drafted Bijan. That was the theory of the draft pick, was that you already had a good running game. Tyler Allgeier was already good. Cordell Patterson is a serviceable secondary running back. You already had a good running game. The theory was, if we're going to draft Bijan that high, we're going to use him to open up the offense. We're going to use him to face fewer stacked boxes. We're going to use him in the passing game. that is going to be kind of the purpose of Bijan Robinson, to become less predictable, to become more, we're going to go back to the early 2000s, multiple, right? Isn't that the coach speak? When was that coach speak? 2009? Is that what we're looking at? So that was the kind of the theory of drafting Bijan Robinson. And then you just kind of go away from it randomly and ugly up a game against a team you're better than and should never do that against. It just, yeah, wash our hands. We're done. Let's talk about something happier here. And that is the Chris Godwin breakout, which I enjoyed immensely last week. We've seen him. He had that thing where, he was criticizing, or his spouse was criticizing the team for not getting targets. We've seen him get a lot more targets the last couple of weeks. He has 41.1% of the targets the last 2 weeks. He still, doesn't have a ton of touchdown equity, but I wonder if we're going to see a higher floor and maybe a better chance at a ceiling moving forward from Godwin, especially in the matchup he has this week, which is really good on paper.
Yeah, I mean, Godwin is a guy, even throughout the course of the season, his target like share was like never bad. Like, he was still involved in the offense. It still was literally a thin target tree. And, we still don't see the ancillary Bucs guys getting a lot of targets. Rashad White is basically like the de facto third target, right, in the offense. Kate Otten's never really a guy that's commanded targets, and none of the wide receiver threes have been on the field enough to really draw targets. The Trey Palmers of the world, the Devin Tompkins of the world, and now David Moore. Great. And I forgot David Moore was in the league, to be honest. Like, my son was like, who is that? And I was like, man, David Moore.
I saw him running down the field, and I was like, oh, hey, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's David Moore, man. Good for him. Like, still getting checks. But yeah, like you said, Godwin was never a guy who like bottomed out, was vocal about getting more targets. And we've also seen teams just start to pay attention to Mike Evans, right? Like, teams started to devote a lot of coverage to Mike Evans, and that's going to open up a guy.
You should cover the guy that gets all the touchdowns for the team. Like, that's a good idea. You should try to cover that fella.
They talked about it, though, 2 weeks ago, where, like, Mike Evans is getting more coverage rolled his way, and that opens up some stuff for Godwin. So, like you said, great matchup. Obviously, the one touchdown, we want more than the one touchdown to, like, really crash the ceiling. Because, I mean, if he has a touchdown on top of that, 10 for 155. I mean, we're cooking, man. Like, we're really baking with something. But this Jaguars team, we want to attack them. I mean, they're a complete pass funnel. The one thing that they've done steadily throughout the course of the season is stop the run. But since their bye, they haven't stopped anyone in the passing game. And it's not all – they've had a hard schedule since the bye, but we're talking about guys like Joe Flacco and Jake Browning have lit them up, like, without no resistance in the air. So definitely Amon Baker Mayfield, and by default, like, you have to go to a guy that's at least getting 20% of the team targets, and if not, like you said, pushing 30 to 40% the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I think that that's the question, because you're right that the target shares have not been bad, but it's been more in that like 20 to 22%. Mm-hmm. And if that jumping up to 28%, if that's what we're going to start seeing, it's not going to be 40%. Like, let's be very clear about that. But if it's jumping up to 28%, then that makes that floor a little bit higher and gives you more opportunity to access that ceiling, which is, I think, what we were missing for Godwin this entire season. And so that would be something I'd be interested in. I'm trying to find this number here. I had it written down in another notes, but not in my podcast notes. Yeah, I believe that the Jaguars team shifted to the pass 4%. Against the Jaguars, which is a pretty big number. The only team that has a bigger number than that is the Bucs. Actually, I think the Bucs and 49ers, but the Bucs are on the list ahead of them. So we're going to talk about this game a little bit later. If Trevor Lawrence aside, and we'll have to see what happens with that. There are reasons to get excited about this Bucs and Jaguars game from a fantasy perspective. You mentioned Joe Flacco and how he did against Tampa Bay. He's not been good, like, from a real life perspective. Let me take that back. The Browns offense looks functional with Joe Flacco at quarterback. That is such a large departure from where they were prior to that Joe Flacco has been doing good enough. However, if you look at his numbers, 57.9% completion, 7.1 yards per attempt, 7 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. So it hasn't been the best. It at least has been functional. And that's all the Browns have needed to put themselves in a really good playoff spot. The thing about the Browns, though, is with Flacco, they have been throwing a ton. They are 6% over their expected pass rate in the last three games. They were 6% under their expected pass rate in the season before that. The Texans offer a great matchup. I have a league where I have CJ Stroud that I am using Joe Flacco as a streamer. I am all in on going back to Joe Flacco in the fantasy playoffs again. And what a wild sentence to say, but like, I think that that's the right call. Where do you stand on Flacco this week?
Yeah, I mean, imagine going back, Ray, and us doing this podcast in, say, September 1st. And I were to look you in the eyes, Ray, and say, hey, in week 15 of the NFL season, there's going to be five quarterbacks that throw for 300 yards. They're going to be Baker Mayfield, and you're going to say, what? Like, whatever. Then I'm going to say Joe Flacco, and you're going to be like, what? He's not even in the league.
My question will be, did Garrett Wilson have a good game? Because that's the only way that makes any sense to me.
I'll say Jake Browning. You'll say, what?
Who?
Yeah. And then I'll say one was Patrick Mahomes. And you'll say, all right, that tracks. And the other guy's Nick Mullins. that's what happened last week. Those are the five quarterbacks who were 300 yards. And it was those five guys. Imagine me just like teleporting back in time and telling you that happened. Like, how would your brain even comprehend? Like, The steps it took to get there.
At that point, Nick Mullins was on IR. So, like, I'm pretty sure he started the season on IR. Joe Flacco wasn't on a team.
But we've seen these. And we have another week, too. And if you made your fantasy playoffs, obviously, we've had one of these throwback weeks where, you know, we had a couple years where just, like, these elite quarterbacks have really carried people. It's mattered to have these elite quarterbacks. And it's not like Jalen Hurts didn't get there last week or Brock Purdy didn't get there. Although Brock Purdy came with – he was a late-round quarterback. He didn't throw him out there. But people have been starting him every week. But we've seen these last couple weeks now in fantasy football, it be back to kind of the Wild West at quarterback position. Like, the guys that are getting their quarterback, I mean, Gardner Minshew's a top six quarterback last week. Derek Carr's a top 10 quarterback. Browning's there again. Aiden O'Connell was the QB3 last week. You know, Jared Goff's the QB1. Baker's the QB2. Like, you've got guys like Fields failing. Josh Allen by kind of default failed, you know, like all these guys like failed. And we have kind of another layout this week in week 16. So these guys like Flacco, these guys like Baker Mayfield, your streamers are on the board this week. It is completely wide open. I mean, Tua is facing the Cowboys. Dak is inversely facing the Dolphins. I mean, we've got all these guys in bad spots again. So it's kind of fun to see. It reminds me of like how fantasy football was like when JJ, you know, dropped the LRQB and, you know, it's here. We're there again.
I was about to say JJ and Denny are living their best lives now that we're back absolutely to late round quarterback. And we might, to be fair, like a real interesting conversation to have is about how this affects drafts next year, not just the best ball drafts that real degenerates like us get involved with in May, but just regular drafts. I mean, we saw a year, I will never forget the Michael Vick year, which Michael Vick absolutely destroyed the league. And we saw the next year Michael Vick came back and was a first round pick in a lot of leagues and then didn't do that again, didn't offer that same type of positional leverage. And then we saw quarterbacks fall back down the board, right? We're going to see the same thing with tight ends, that Kelce this year didn't offer the same kind of leverage he had the year before. Somebody on this podcast might have suggested that would be the case, and his name's Rich Rebar, and that's why he's a genius. But we're going to probably see the top tight ends go down the board as well. And so are we going to get back more into this heavy wide receiver, heavy running back first three rounds, and many fewer of these quarterbacks taken? I don't know. It's going to be an interesting situation to watch. To this point, Derek Knowles actually has a question for us in the chat. Jordan Love or Kyler Murray this week? Oh, I know you have some concerns about Kyler Murray.
And I have kind some of the way about Jordan Love.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think by just default of archetype, I would choose Kyler because, like, if you just luck box into, like, the rushing game, right? Because, I mean, Jordan, so I haven't been playing quarterbacks against the Panthers for a while. Like, you know, I've obviously wrote about it in the worksheet. I mean, they're seventh in the NFL in passing points allowed. They're seventh in yards per pass attempt allowed. They haven't allowed a QB1 since week six. And over that span, they faced guys like Dak Prescott and CJ Stroud. Like, that was when Dak was on the heater, too. And, like, he had 5.5 yards per pass attempt and did nothing. So I think with Love, he takes more of, like, a step of faith. And Love's not a guy that has, like, a high ceiling anyways. I think I would, and not that I don't have questions about Kyler. I just think if you're talking about the two, I'm just going to take the guy that has, like, the rushing ability. And I'm just going to say, football, Jesus take the wheel.
Yeah. I on the Panthers, it's kind of one of those situations where their defense actually isn't bad. Like, it's much better than you would expect out of a team with two wins. And then they're not going to press you at all. Their offense is not good at, like, it is dreadful how bad their offense is. And so you're in the situation where you're going up against a decent defense and you're not going to get pushed. And so you're not going to have a lot of volume against a good defense. And that's just a bad, like, that's just fantasy disaster is what that is. And especially, I mean, Christian Watson's not playing this week. It doesn't look like Jaden Reed is playing this week. At least that would be my guess when we're recording this on Thursday morning. And so, yeah, it's just, it's a bad situation for Love. And I think you're right. Hopefully we get one of those Murray rushing touchdowns and that goes ahead and saves.
I have to start Kyler in a league and I'm not happy about it either, but it has to be done.
Because as I talk about on the Sunday podcast a lot lately, the Bears defense is quietly pretty good.
Yep.
And I know people thought that last week they were going to get, you know, exposed or whatever. And it turns out they're just actually good. And so that's something to worry about for sure. One last thing here, and this is just, these are the kind of quotes we normally get in May and devote content around, but I was very fascinating to hear Kevin O'Connell say that he wants to get Ty Chandler, the ball a lot, even if Madison is back. Now, I don't think Madison is back this week, so it probably does not matter, but I do think that that's telling that we're going to see a lot more of what we saw from Chandler last week. He had 95.8% of the running back carries last week. I think we're going to see him dominate the workload again. And I do think that even when Madison gets back, if that's this week, if it's kind of moving forward, they do get the Lions twice over the final 3 weeks, so that's tough, that we could see Chandler be a really good kind of sneaky spot in DFS, because I think that we might just see a Chandler backfield now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, this week, especially if there's no Madison, he's a guy you just say, hey, he's going to play every down. You take the touches again, let fantasy Jesus take the wheel. like a little, even if it's a bad matchup, right? Because it is not a good matchup. And you look at the Vikings in general, as a team, they have only run the ball successfully against big teams we've literally targeted for you and I to run the football against. Like, you know, so it's like,
No. Maybe
I got you. Maybe in front of me, man. You're going to, I need a blocker.
Yeah. I could fullback. Yeah. Svelte, you could pick up some yards. Me, I'm running 3 yards and hoping for the best. So,
It's going to, I mean, obviously we've seen when they tried to trade for Cam Akers, like this has always been a situation where the Vikings have said, like, they never really trusted Alexander Madison to, like, perform in this role, right? And that's been up in the air kind of the entire season. And now that Chandler, like, played so well that they're not going to put back in the bottle, although, again, they ran on a team that lost DJ Reader the very first play of the game, and a team that we've been targeting every week to run against anyways. So we'll see how they run the ball against the Lions. But if Madison's out and he's just going to have almost 100% of the backfield touches, I mean, he had 96% of the backfield touches last week. Even matchup be damned, like, that's volume based throw at the wall stuff. Like, you just hope you get in the you hope you catch enough passes and you hope you fall into the end zone, even if you only average 3 yards a carry. We don't care about that, right? Like, so that's why you throw it, because it is a hard matchup. But when Madison comes back, and then we talk about, even if it's like a 70-30 split with Chandler versus Madison, that could impact things, because this team just hasn't run the football good against anybody that has mattered this season.
Yeah, and like, so they can't run the ball. They're in a bad matchup. And I the thing about Chandler is that you look at his yards per carry, it's 4.7. That looks pretty good. But 18.1% of his carries have been zero or negative yards. So it's not like he's been the model of efficiency. He's kind of a Kirkland Kenneth Walker at this point. Like, that's kind of what
he is, like a 40-yard fake punt run, like, in his sample.
Yeah. It's an interesting kind of situation with him. But I do think you're right. He's going to get a ton of touches, and you're just going to play it.
Yeah, he's going to be a really popular main slate guy, because running back on the main slate this week, the way the NFL chopped the games up, like, Rashad White's the most expensive running back on DraftKings on the main slate, because it's the nine-game main slate is just terrible. So, like, he's 5,600 on DraftKings. He's going to be immensely popular just because of the volume, right? Like I said, people are just going to say, I've got this 100% backfield guy. Who cares if the matchup's bad? I'm just going to throw the touches at the wall.
Yeah, and I think that at that type of roster percentage, I'm kind of okay fading him in this matchup, even with all of that, but you know, he got some long runs. Like, he is the type of running back who could just get a 60-yard touchdown, and that you're out, right? You're busted.
His prospect profile is interesting. I mean, he was a guy that caught a lot of passes in college. He's an athletic guy, so like, it does all track, and he was really good in the last two preseasons. It was kind of I think a lot of people were befuddled when they traded for Cam Akers, of just like, well, man, like, what's the story with Ty Chandler? Like, why isn't he getting any burn?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is why is it taking this long? Right? Like, why? We've seen Madison. They brought in Cam Akers because they didn't trust Madison. Why has it taken this long? Maybe that means that we're going to get overly excited about what we saw last week as well. And so lots of questions here for him. I'm a little distracted here because I'm getting news. I'm getting word. We have a new promo, Rich, that I was literally just sent right now. About our postseason package. And we're getting here to the end of the season. We're offering a postseason package. I mentioned this earlier. We have been absolutely killing on our betting recommendations. If you followed Warren's betting recommendations this year and you're $100 better, you'd be up $8,700. That is the kind of year that we've had. We've been absolutely killing it. We've done very well with college bowls. We've done very well with the postseason in the past. Just had a college bowl winner two nights ago with UTSA -7. And so you can get all of that in our postseason package. You can save $50 off of that postseason package if you use the promo code HOLIDAY while checking out. Plus, by the way, if you get that, you can get the next 3 weeks of our regular season betting recommendations for free. So if you purchase the postseason all access package, includes college bowls, NFL playoffs, you also get the rest of the regular season free. Sign up now, use promo code HOLIDAY, go to sharpfootballanalysis.com. There we go. Off the cuff. I'm pretty happy with that read, just like the first time seeing it off the cuff.
Professional delivery.
I'm pretty happy with that. I'm feeling good about it. All right, let's get into some of our game previews. We kind of mentioned this one while we were going through the quarterback situation, and that is the Cowboys-Dolphins, the second biggest game of the week. I almost said the biggest game of the week, but that's not true. We have another one we'll talk about in a second. The second biggest game of the week, and I think where we start with this game is, we mentioned when we were doing Bills-Cowboys last week that game could let down for fantasy. Unless it was James Cook, it 100% did let down for fantasy. And if you avoided stacking that game, again, outside of James Cook, then you probably had a better DFS day. I think we could be in a similar situation with this game, Cowboys and Dolphins. Both of these defenses are good. And I think it's time. I don't pay a ton of attention to home and away splits. I think that a lot of that is noise. But this deep into the season, and with the performances we've seen from the Cowboys on the road, it might be time to take these splits seriously. The Cowboys have scored nearly 40 points per game at home and 21.7 points per game on the road. And that includes the week one when they absolutely slaughtered the Giants 40-0. They have not been as good on the road. Dak hasn't been as good on the road. I'm starting to get worried about these splits. I'm starting to take them a little bit more seriously. And you got to put that all together. And this game could disappoint a little bit, I think.
I mean, this game just has a lot of kind of question marks anyways. Obviously, there's a path where just like, this game is fire, right? Like, there is. Obviously, everyone can see that. Like, there is that in the range of outcomes. Like Cowboys-Seahawks was a few weeks ago, right? Like, there's absolutely that kind of potential. But there also is a lot of pulling threads here of like, like you said, the path to failure. Like, the question mark of the Cowboys, they're 0-3, like you said, as a road underdog this season. They've been outscored by 20 points. Like, the Cowboys know how to fail. Like, they do not half step when they fail. Like, they go all in.
They don't give you the halfway fail. They give you the full thing.
Like, the Bills are a halfway fail team, right? Like, when you look at all the Bills losses, you're just like, damn, like that Eagles game, like, it's just a fire-ass game. They lose, like, whatever. Like, the Cowboys are just like, we're just not gonna show up. Like, they did it against the 49ers game, and then they bought all our equity back, and then that last week just dust. It's absolutely just get flooded out of Buffalo. And then you have this Dolphins team who have, every time they've been tasked to play a team that's good, which hasn't been often, they've gotten flooded. Like, they're 0-3 against teams with a winning record and haven't played any of those games particularly close either. So we've got to see which narrative. Obviously, both those things can't happen this week. So one will break. Which is pretty cool.
Or hold on, I like your optimism. This game could finish 6-3. Like, that also could happen. But I do like your optimism that both of them can't let us down. I do. You're that's that holiday spirit within you that you're not seeing the ultimate downside here.
Yeah, I think my question for this game through a fantasy lens, outside of like removing DFS where everyone's expensive, sure. And then like we live in like a restriction of like guys you can put on your roster. But when you're playing your guys in fantasy this week, is there's you can almost tear down every player in this game. And it was a similar case last week with the Buffalo game. And when I start writing up the worksheet and you're getting in these game flow stance, I don't think necessarily the game, because obviously the game total's high and that's going to lead people to play players in the game. But when I'm starting to write up the individual players and how their individual matchup looks, and like you start to just get layer in like, ooh, this could be like a tougher spot for this guy. This could be a tougher spot for this guy. And it was just kind of repeatedly that for the case for everyone here. You look at Tua. Tua has been a QB1 in one of his past six games. That game came against the Commanders, like a pretty obvious spot. And the state of the Miami offensive line, I still think is a potential issue in this game in both capacities. Because I know a lot of people are saying, well, like, hey, Buffalo just ran all over the Dallas Cowboys. That's what the Dolphins are going to do. Mike McDaniel and this Dolphins team, like, they're absolutely just going to crush them on the ground. But the Bills offensive line is way better right now than the Dolphins offensive line. This Dolphins offensive line is, and Mike McDaniel had a nice work around it in the passing game last week, but in the run game, it was still a major issue. Raheem Mostert averaged less than a half yard per carry before contact last week. He got there with the two touchdowns, but they didn't efficiently run the football in that game because they couldn't block anyone up front. Are they going to be able to block this Dallas front the way Buffalo did last week? That's a question we don't know, right? It's going to remain to be seen. And if they have to drop back and throw, are they going to be able to pass protect and hold up long enough? Is this quick passing game going to work? Because that was the out last week. They got rid of Tua, threw the ball under 2.5 seconds on 70% of his throws, the highest rate in the NFL. Is that the game plan again against the Cowboys? I would think it would be something along those lines because of the Dallas pass rush, who still pressured Josh Allen on 11 of 19 dropbacks last week, even though the Bills did not throw. So, like, I still think the Miami offensive line could still be an issue in this game. And then we have kind of the question of the Miami Dolphin defense, which has really gelled the back half of the season. But they also have faced just vagabonds, like absolute bums. Like, they faced the Jets twice, Mac Jones, Aiden O'Connell, Will Levis. Like, it has been bad, like, this schedule. So we're going to get some kind of truth revealed in like how good this Dolphins defense is. I will say I do believe in the Dolphins defense, though. And I think we talked about it in the offseason. Like, you hire Vic Fangio, you add Jalen Ramsey. Losing Jalen Phillips is a bummer, but they've got stars everywhere. I mean, Christian Wilkins, like, they've got studs to play good defense. So I do think there is some truth into it. It's just that their level of competition that's back half of the season has been like a real farce, though. Like, and that's been the case of the NFL this year. There are legitimately six good quarterbacks left in the NFL right now.
I think that it is important to note that about the Dolphins is that they haven't faced a lot of competition, but this isn't a situation where them being a good defense is surprising based on the coach that they have and the talent. And so that lends you to more believing that this is real. What I will say, though, is early in the season, I was disappointed. And that was before Jalen Ramsey came back. But I was disappointed in this Dolphins defense at various different points. And so it hasn't been a smooth ride. It hasn't just been they've been good this entire season. There have been times where they weren't as good. And it didn't make sense because they still had a ton of talent, even without Jalen Ramsey. And so I think that it will be interesting to see. On the running thing, and you're 100% right about the Dolphins offensive line and the issues that exists there. But what I will say about this Cowboys run defense is, even before last week, if you took the five games before last week, they had been much more mid-pack against running back runs, and they had been giving up a lot of long runs. From week 10 to 14, they were the eighth highest explosive run rate allowed. And that's obviously something the Dolphins are good at creating. The Dolphins are first at running back explosive run rate this season. And so that, again, lends itself to maybe what we saw from Buffalo last week was not a fluke, and was, you know, it's, well, we're not going to see, 176 yards from Raheem Mostert, I don't think. But, like, this Cowboys defense has been more vulnerable to the run. This Dolphins defense has been good at doing it, even with offensive line questions. And so I do think there's a path there for those guys. About kind of Tua, and this makes sense, right? This is the way it works. So Tua's drop back in games that they've won. He's dropped back like 34 times per game. And games that they've lost or games that they've been an underdog, it's been more like 40 times. We've seen recently that even though he's been super efficient, he hasn't been forced to drop back a lot. And I do wonder if, are we going to be able to continue to see that same efficiency even against a good defense? And will the Cowboys be good enough even on the road to push them to where the Dolphins have to drop back? Could we maybe, even in a bad matchup, still get to access ceiling games from Tua, from Tyreek if he plays, from Waddle if he plays? I do think that there's a pathway to that as well. And that's what makes this game interesting. There's a lot of things that could happen in this game. Like it's going to be fascinating to see which kind of way this goes.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's a path through this game. Like you said, the Cowboys just 3 weeks ago played this absolute barn burner against Geno Smith, right? Like on the road. So to say like the Dolphins with Tyreek and Tua can't have like that kind of outcome would be crazy, just to say. I mean, does it like the probability get lowered? Yeah, it does. But that there's still a path to that. And I think that's what makes this game so exciting. And the fact that this game is at 4 p.m. and in December versus September at 1 p.m. is like a massive difference for the Cowboys, too. Because the stadium in Miami, I can't believe, like, they're trying to ban the tush push and like the hip drop tackle. Like, this is the most like egregious thing. Like this competitive advantage that Miami's created in their stadium for 1 p.m. kicks early in the season, where this, I don't know if anyone has ever, people know about this, but like the shadow covers everything but the opponent's sideline in that stadium at 1 p.m. kicks. And it's like 130 degrees on the opponent's sideline every week. Like, I can't believe that's been allowed to just go on.
The way you said Geno Smith's name, like, absolutely got me. Like, he said it with such disdain. Geno Smith.
Poor as someone who was in on Geno and cut Geno in a lot of leagues very early in the season, to miss out on one good game outside of whatever best balls I still have, I assume all of the ones I have with him are dead. But although he was a QB2 in a lot of drafts because of where he was going. But yeah, I mean, it's been a tough year. Hey, Geno's got a couple weeks to finish strong.
Well, this podcast liked Geno Smith, and that hasn't gone great. Though Geno and Tony Pollard really letting us down, and Christian Watson's hamstrings. Those are the three. Are those the three for this podcast?
James Cook's coming on strong.
We do have a question here from Tyson Carter. Would you start Tua, Stafford, or Kyler? Man.
I mean, I'm probably just going to play Tua and just take the game environment, right? Like, that's basically what I'm going to say, like range of outcomes, right? Like Stafford, I think, is probably like if you're favored, right? Like, say the rest of your team's favored and it looks solid. I think Stafford's going to be solid tonight on Thursday night. But like, is it going to be like a top five week for Stafford against the Saints defense? Probably not, right? Even as good as they've been running. Like, that game's probably going to be more mid-scoring to lower scoring, and you don't get any rushing equity with Stafford. Also, the Rams run the hell out of the football, more than people, I think, realize. Like, they're a running team, like a legit
especially
running team.
Especially when they're ahead. Especially when they're leading. Like, if you think they're going to be leading in this game, then they are going to run.
But I do think he's the safest, but I mean, game environment wise, like you just again, like say, like if this Dolphins Cowboys game gets there, like you take Tua, especially if Tyreek plays.
Yeah, Tyreek playing is a big part of that. Unfortunately, we're not going to know before Stafford goes. But yeah, I think I would play Tua there as well. The biggest game of the week, I mentioned it with Cowboys Dolphins, that's second biggest. The biggest game of the week is Ravens 49ers. Just a massive game. The two number one seeds in the AFC and the NFC, two teams that have been playing extremely well. Some of the stats you had in the kind of bullets at the top of the worksheet about how often these teams have been leading and like how many of their offensive staffs they've been leading. These are two dominant teams and have been dominant. The Ravens record, they had a few slip ups late in games. We obviously know the 49ers had that three games skid, but these two teams have been absolutely dominant all season. And it's going to make for an interesting game. The problem with this game, however, is that we like both of these defenses a lot. We think that both of these defenses are good. And so that creates an issue, especially if you're playing Christmas DFS. You have an issue because the first couple games are projected to be lopsided games with relatively low totals. And then we have this game, which is at least going to be hopefully an exciting game, but it's featuring two defenses. And so you're kind of in an odd situation. We can get started here with Christian McCaffrey who you're playing Christian McCaffrey if you're playing regular season fantasy football. I mean, there's no reason to talk about that. But from a DFS perspective, I wonder, are we just going to trust that CMC, because he's CMC, we're just going to trust that he's going to get there? Or is this kind of one of those games where we'll see more of like floor output from him, and he's not worth the price you're going to have to pay on Christmas Day to have him in your lineups? I think it's an interesting conversation for him.
Yeah, I would say it's probably not like the 40-point CMC game, but I think there's definitely a path for him to still get the 20 points, which is, I think, like everyone that's facing CMC would take. That's how I kind of wrote it up, right? Like, I was like, you know, like you're just hoping like this is a spot where like CMC can't bury you to get to the fantasy finals. Because when you're, where your opponent has CMC and they found out last week, like that 40 is tough to come back from. It's tough to come out of the grave when the dude puts 40 up. But if he gets 20, that's you can climb out of it. I will say, from a top-down perspective, I have a lot more faith in the 49ers offense than I do the Ravens offense in this spot. Yes. And the 49ers just might be a matchup they get there on everybody, right? We do have the Browns game as a sample, though. Like, the Browns are the best defense the 49ers have faced, and they outright failed in that game. And I know there's some weird circumstances that happened in the game. Debo left the game early. Trent Williams got hurt. It was in the rain. All that, like, is in there. But, like, they sucked that game. That's, like, the one game the 49ers, like, legitimately played bad offense. Even in their two losses, like, they were good offense. They just had some turnovers and some things. They probably didn't play as good as defense those games either. Definitely not the Bengals game. Jordan Addison catches, like, a weird fluky touchdown before halftime of the Vikings game, too, that kind of throws that game in a weird state. But neither of these teams have played from behind. And so we don't really know if any of these offenses are good playing from behind. And I kind of pull up like both the quarterback samples playing from behind are bad. Like, so like, you know, Purdy's 25th in the league in quarterback rating while he's trailing. Lamar only has 44 dropbacks trailing the second half, but he's averaging fewer than 6 yards per pass attempt in those dropbacks. That's kind of been the Lamar MO for his career, right? And that's what's always been the teardown of Lamar in the playoffs, is like, if you force the Ravens to play from behind, like, you're going to be in a good spot. And until Lamar has one of these like massive comebacks against these teams. But if you look at Lamar's career, he's been awesome against like top 10 defenses. He's been awesome as like an underdog on the road. So like, they've always hit in these spots. Like, Harbaugh's always rallied in these spots. So it is one of these games. It could be just like a fight. It could be a fist fight, or the 49ers could still just be just a legit Death Star, because we saw the Ravens not be able to slow down the Rams 2 weeks ago. And I think that's what throws like the biggest wrinkle in for me, is it's going back to 2 weeks ago. They couldn't stop the Rams. And, you know, we know where that coaching tree lies, and Shanahan probably has some stuff to work against Mike McDonald, but this is a fun ass game. It sucks that it's Christmas night. Thanks, NFL.
It's actually better that it's Christmas night and not Christmas morning.
That's true.
I'm looking forward to this game. I can't wait to watch this game, because I think we're going to get a lot of answers to your point. And as to trusting the 49ers offense more than the Ravens offense, I think that is, I agree with you 100%. And it actually leads me to kind of the question I have is, can we trust any Ravens pass catcher in this game? I mean, we've seen Zay Flowers be up and down. Isaiah Likely, he's been getting there, but this is a really tough matchup for tight ends. This is a really tough matchup for tight ends not named Trey McBride, I should say. This is a tough matchup for all other tight ends that aren't apparently the greatest ones in the league. We saw Odell last week not get there. We saw how fragile his kind of box scores can be based on not being a full-time player. If he's not getting that high target rate per route, which he had been getting, didn't get it last week. We've seen how fragile that can be. So there's a ton of questions. I mean, Bateman hasn't been involved. I don't think I trust any of these pass catchers, and that makes it difficult to get excited about this offense outside of just Lamar running for 100 yards and a touchdown. And so it kind of puts you in a difficult situation from a DFS perspective when trying to, you know, play this offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the individual pieces, it's been kind of the story all year, right? Like, you know, it's why we kind of got excited about Keaton Mitchell a little bit. You know, Zay Flowers has basically lived as like a wide receiver three, really volatile wide receiver three the entire season. He hasn't had 80 yards. He hasn't even had 80 yards receiving in a game this season. I mean, he's only scored a touchdown in three separate games. Like, he looks the part. Like, Zay Flowers looks the part of NFL player, but like for fantasy football, like, he has not been a reliable asset at all. So now that we're going against a tough defense in a game where Lamar maybe not has the passing, like, you're just hoping he catches a touchdown, right? And it's a guy that's only, like I said, caught a touchdown pass in three games. It's where we are, I think, with all the Ravens, is you're just hoping to get a touchdown. It's hard to objectively paint a lot of yardage and a lot of volume for any of these guys. I think that's what makes the 49ers side tricky too, outside of Christian McCaffrey, is all the 49ers since their bye have been getting there because, like, Brock Purdy's had this, like, insane number since the bye. I pitched it to Hilo a couple weeks ago, and he kind of, like, laughed at me, but I said, like, I think the 49ers are fed up with, like, this Brock Purdy shit, like, people questioning Brock Purdy, and they wanted to make it, and they've made a statement.
I don't think that's wild conspiracy theory. It has been different the last few weeks, I would say. And I think that they're tired of hearing this about Brock Purdy. And we've just seen, like, some of the stuff they're doing to get Debo open, and just we're back to 2021 Debo, which I didn't know if we'd ever see again. It has been, it's been interesting, this offense, over the last few weeks.
But let's say that the 49ers offense gets there, but it's not, like, since the bye, it's maybe towards, like, early in the season. And it's more restrictive, right? Like, it's a good game for the 49ers offense, but not one of these, like, absolutely smash spots where, like, Purdy's throwing for 300 plus and four touchdowns. He throws for 250 and maybe two or three. Then that throws a wrench back in this 49ers offense, because it forces all these guys, like, well, all these guys have to win on, like, five targets each, right? And then it's like, who scored the touchdown for the 49ers outside of McCaffrey? Like, so if you have Ayuk, if you have Debo, if you have Kittle, this also could be a spot where it is one of these, like, 49ers, like, floor games for, like, those guys, where just, like, a guy is, like, completely just, like, doing the Silicon Valley, you know, Jared beam, just looking out the window, like, where are my targets? Like, you know, that could be the case this week too for this 49er offense.
Yeah. Like, it really could be a case of who scores the touchdowns. And you're just trying to make your bets on it.
Yes.
Recent history suggests Debo is the answer to that question. But, I mean, if George Kittle comes out and catches three touchdown passes, those are the only three touchdowns the 49ers scored, would you be shocked by that? Absolutely not. That is the kind of nonsense that happens in this 49ers offense. You mentioned Keaton Mitchell. I do think it's interesting to talk about the Ravens backfield now that Keaton Mitchell is out for the season. I think if you go back to what we were seeing earlier in the year, we're going to see kind of this Justice Hill on, you know, passing down roll. I don't think actually much changes for Justin Hill, because I think it's just going to be pretty much what he's been doing. I do think we might get back to Gus Edwards as more of a featured back on early downs. From week 3 to week 11, he had 60.2% of the running back carries. He averaged 13 carries a game. That's probably not enough to matter here unless he somehow finds his way in the end zone, because this isn't a good matchup. But I do think it's something to watch on Monday, so that as we kind of move forward, we can know what we're going to do with this backfield. Is that kind of where you're landing with it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Gus Edwards is, like, the guy for fantasy. Obviously, he's a little more touchdown dependent, but he's going to be the guy pushing, like, the double digit touches mostly. Justice Hill was always a thorn, man. Like, he's had this role. Like, we hate it as fantasy gamers because it's completely empty calorie role. But, like, he's been playing passing downs literally the whole season. Like, they trust him in that spot. He's not getting a lot of touches. He'll probably have a random game where he scores a touchdown. Probably be this one, right? Like, of two touches and a touchdown.
But this is the one. Yeah.
It's hard to see him, like, being fantasy viable, because even early in the season, he has no pipeline to money touches. Like, you know, no touches on the goal line. And the Ravens don't throw to their running backs. There's no catch equity to be had in this offense. So, like I said, he's very empty calorie snaps for Justice Hill.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Any thoughts on the Christmas Day DFS slate before? It's an interesting slate because it's only three games, but you actually have good running backs, which that main game, main slate, you mentioned it, don't even have good running backs. And you have, like, four of them on this one.
Yeah.
Even, and I guess, quarterbacks. Even more odd, there are several good tight end options, which, I mean, that's wild as well. So I do think it's going to be interesting to see how lineups are built. I would imagine there's a lot of three running back lineups. I wonder if double tight end would end up being kind of a good way to get contrarian. I'm not really sure how this is going to work out. You have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it looks great. It looks better than the three-game slates we had. Obviously, Thanksgiving's always fun for everybody, but we've had the Thanksgiving slate, we had last week's Saturday slate, and this three-game slate. And out of the three, these, from, like, a player perspective, this has the most star power easily of the three slates. So, I mean, we've got the Chiefs in a really good spot at home. So like Mahomes and Kelsey look like they're up and active. You got the Eagles at home in a really great bounce back spot against this really aggressive Giants defense, which should get them back on track. So you got guys like AJ Brown. I mean, AJ Brown, I put some of the stats in the worksheet. They're almost like not even real, right? Like, you know, typically when we talk about like, if a guy's in a spot against like coverage or against the blitz or anything, and we're talking about like high target shares, and you're like, oh, it's like in the 30s, right? Like 30% is like a really high target share. Against the blitz, AJ Brown is 45% of the Eagles targets. And against man coverage, he has 49% of the Eagles targets. Like those are, that's like, it's like that, those like aren't real numbers. Like this, it gets absolutely crazy. So if, you know, Wink's going to do his Wink thing, like AJ Brown could have a huge Christmas day for people that have gotten him this far. I know people are kind of let down by some of like the game. He hasn't like bottomed out the last couple weeks, but he was so good early in the season that people took that for granted. They're like, we're just gonna get this every week. But man, yeah, there's a lot of star power. And then you just have that game and it to cap it off where you have literally all these good fantasy options, but the quarterbacks, the running backs, tight ends, I mean, there's a lot of good players in this 3-game slate.
Hey, it's interesting to me that you talked about the good matchups for Kansas City and the Eagles, and you didn't mention either of the running backs, because I do think that's actually where the best matchup for both of these teams. Yeah, like that's the best matchup for both these teams. But because of all that star power, because Pacheco has missed time, because DeAndre Swift has disappointed us, maybe some people who really could have used a big game from Swift last week, then maybe the fact that you just kind of glossed over him, maybe everybody's going to gloss over, many people gloss over him. I don't know. There's something to think about.
Well, you got to play running backs. There will be at least two running backs set in every lineup. I imagine Christian McCaffrey.
They will be highly rostered because it's a short slate. But yeah.
Christian McCaffrey is going to have a ton of – he's going to be the dude people try to jam in. Like you said, if it's a Christian McCaffrey 17-point game at that salary, like that's advantageous to the field.
Absolutely. I do think, and this, there's a very good chance this bites me. And if you're listening, Fantasy Receipts, you can clip it and say it. I don't think I will play any Christian McCaffrey on the Christmas Day DFS slate. And I will see what happens. That could cost me all my money. And because he's Christian McCaffrey, he can score 40 points against anybody. I'm not saying that that's not possible, but I do think that we have a better chance at a more of a floor game for McCaffrey, which is still good. It's still going
to
be 15.
But that's what you have to do on those slates. So this is what usually gets people into trouble on these short slates. And I talk about it usually every Thanksgiving when we do a DFS show, is people try to take these 3-game slates. And because there's only a finite number of players, they try to cover everything happening, and you can't do that. You, even if 150 lineups, you cannot cover everything happening, and people spread their player pool too thin and in these 3-game slates, which you got to make hard decisions like that. You have to say on these 3-game slate, I'm just gonna say, hey, I'm money dollars for donuts, like this is a Christian McCaffrey game where he only has 15 to 18 points, and I'm gonna 0% him because it's not worth that salary. Those are the things you have to do to be successful on these types of slates.
Yeah. So anyway, everybody else though should play a lot of McCaffrey, because me saying that means he's going to score 50 points. So congratulations to all of you, that have McCaffrey. We're running out of time here. That's the way to go. We're running out of time here. I do want to mention, so we talked about kind of that Bucks Jaguars game at the top. That is one of my favorite games of this week. And I mentioned the reasons: two bad passing defenses, two defenses that are more of a pass funnel. The weather could be odd, but that's going to be a problem for a lot of games this week. The one thing I do want to mention in this game, though, is I am worried about Trevor Lawrence. Even if Lawrence plays, I'm worried about him. We've seen him not be right the last 2 weeks. Over the last 2 weeks, 18.3% of his passes have been deemed off target. He has 4 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. If he plays, or if he doesn't play and we get CJ Beathard, that could torpedo this game. And that's really the one thing I'm worried about in this game, because if Lawrence plays and Lawrence is Trevor Lawrence, I mean, the targets that Ridley's getting, the targets that Ingram's getting, the targets that Evans are getting, Godwin's getting, Rashad White, like all of that, this is going to be a smash spot. And so Lawrence is really going to, I think, be the kind of key factor there for me.
I think he's the key for the game popping. The cool thing about this game is you actually can play it if you're just worried about the quarterback spot and don't want to play your guy beat hard if he plays. You can play it through the Baker side still too and still get access to guys like Evan Ingram and, Calvin Ridley and Parker Washington.
Parker Washington. Let's move on to our uncut.
Get you the segue, baby. That's the segue.
Look at that segue. Uncut gems. My uncut gem for this week is actually Parker, Washington. And from this game, I mean, the game environment, I've talked about it a few times. That is why I'm excited about Parker, Washington. I'm also a Penn State fan. That's one of the other reasons I'm excited about Parker, Washington. I watched this guy make plays in college over and over and over again. But what I will say is he already had a 11.5% target share since Christian Kirk left. With Zay Jones playing, he's been on the field for 63.3% of dropbacks. With Zay Jones playing, Zay Jones is not playing this week. And the other thing about that, other thing about him is he has more of a shallow depth of target, which that does remove some ceiling, but we haven't seen Lawrence have the accuracy issues with those shallower targets. That's one of the reasons Evan Engram has been popping recently. And Parker Washington's in that same part of the field. I think he's going to be on the field a lot. I think he's going to get targets. He is a factor in the end zone. We've already seen him have two end zone targets over the last three games. He caught both of them. That is something that goes back to college, his ability to make plays and make kind of spectacular contested catches. I think everything sets up really well here for Parker Washington to have a pretty good game. If you've lost people, if you know you're going to be missing Jamar Chase, for instance, and you just need to fill a spot, I think that Parker Washington could have a pretty good game this week.
Yeah, Parker Washington was a dude in college, man. It's just, you know, he played with, obviously you're a Penn State guy, but you played with some bad quarterbacks. Was the youngest wide receiver in this class. So, I mean, I always liked him. I had him in on a college DFS team and always liked him. Good spot for him.
Can't say he played with bad quarterbacks, but Penn State during his run had an NFL starter, Will Levis, and an NFL fifth round pick, John Clifford, which again, still don't understand how that happened, because you're right, he did play with bad quarterbacks, and here we are with Parker Washington. He would have gone higher in the draft if we're just relitigating draft takes. He would have gone higher in the draft if he didn't miss most of the testing because of an injury. So he fell to where he fell. He is more talented than his day three draft stock, and I'm very interested to see where we go from him moving forward from like a dynasty perspective. I have him in a lot of dynasty leagues for that reason. But anyway, who's your uncut gem for this week?
Yeah, I've got Jacoby Myers. Fun one here. And it's for a couple of different reasons that like sync up. Well, for one is the Chiefs have just been absolutely dominant against lead wide receivers this season. Obviously, Legarius Sneed's got a lot of pub this year, but they are third in the NFL in points allowed per game to wide receiver ones. They are allowing the fewest receiving yards per game to opposing wide receiver ones. The only time over the past five games that Devontae Adams hasn't gotten double-digit targets was when he faced the Chiefs, when these teams played in Week 12. Also, when you look at the Chiefs, where they do give up catches to wide receivers, they're typically two slot receivers. They're the only team to allow over half of their receptions to opposing slot receivers, 51%. And when we saw Myers in that game, he caught 6 of 7 targets for 79 yards and a touchdown. It's not a sexy pick at all, but like, he is a guy I think that has a higher floor than people assume if you're in a pinch this week.
Yeah, I have a juggernaut team that had Keenan Allen and Michael Pittman on it. I'm feeling good about Pittman. I think Pittman's going to play this week. I'm feeling much less good about Keenan Allen, and I think that's going to lead to me playing Jacoby Myers. And at least it's the Chiefs. That's what I keep telling myself. At least it's the Chiefs. We have some success here, and we think they might push him. We're almost out of time, but I do want to get to a question here. Devontae Adams, Jahmyr Gibbs, Brandon Ayuk, or Chris Olave? Who do I bench? Currently have Olave on the bench. You did just mention a little bit there about Devontae Adams. Kind of where are you looking with this group?
I don't know if this is like what this is, PPR or whatever. Obviously in PPR, it's tough to sit wide receivers anyways. I do think Gibbs is going to catch a lot of passes though against the Vikings. Although I think he probably is the most, I would say honestly, the most fragile of those guys is probably Ayuk, right? People hate to say it because when Ayuk smashes, because he's so good, right? Like, we clearly see the talent that Ayuk has, and like, it's going to be interesting what happens to him, because they can fifth year option him this year. Because he was a first round, they snuck him in as the first round draft pick. So I think they already picked up his fifth year option, but they snuck him in the first round because they traded up. But then, like, he's a guy that's going to command a huge payday, and they're going to have to pay Purdy. They'll still have Debo on the books. Like, it's going to be the 49ers are just going to, obviously, Purdy's going to, he gives them access for a couple of years of some fun money. But yeah, it'd be interesting what happens with Brandon. I honestly would say I'd be between Ayuk and Adams, I think, out of the two.
I think it's Ayuk because of the game environment that I don't know if it's going to shoot out. And like you said, that he's going to have to do it on 5 or 6 targets. And sometimes that's not going to work out. And so I would say that would be where I would go. To your point, he's scheduled to make $14.1 million next year on his fifth year option. And then he's undrafted. And then he's a unrestricted free agent after that. Yeah. If you look at his underlying numbers, he is one of the best wide receivers in the league. If you look at kind of his efficiency numbers, so it'll be interesting to see what happens to him.
A lot of film when we get there. Love him. Like the actual film crowd, like also like backs up like the efficiency stuff. They're like, no, this dude is a demon.
Yeah. So that's actually a nice mesh. When you get both yes. the spreadsheet nerds and probably the film good. Guys together. That's the Nick Chubb. We could call that what? The Nick Chubb corollary would both of the with the spreadsheet nerds and the film bros when they're in on it. That's a good sign for him. All right, we got to get out of here. Really appreciate you listening to the podcast. Remember, we're not going to have our Sunday recap edition of the podcast this week. That's Christmas Eve. We're going to spend some time with our family, but Rich and I will be back to talk with you next Thursday. Head over to Sharp Football Analysis. You can find all the worksheets. You can find everything we have now. As we learned while this podcast was airing, we have a sale running on our postseason package. Use the promo code HOLIDAY, get $50 off. And if you do that, you're going to get the final 3 weeks of the regular season free as well. It's a great deal. Make sure you go and check that out. And like I said, Rich and I will be back to talk with you next week. We'll be right back.